Hi, this is Matt Chandler. You're about to listen to God and Sex, which was a teaching we did on Friday night, October the 16th, 2009, as a part of our culture and theology series. We spent the first hour teaching and defining really what the Bible says sex is and what it was given for. And then the second hour was questions that were answered. They were actually texted in and then answered live and on the spot. I wanted to tell you before you get further into this recording that this is an extremely frank discussion about human sexuality, specifically when we get into the Q&A. And so although there were teenagers and young teenagers and present in the teaching, there might be some of you out there who don't want your children to hear some of the things that we address in this recording. So I wanted to give you a warning, and my prayer is that God would use really the next 2 hours to open up your mind, open up your heart, and to let you see what a beautiful and good gift this is if we walk in it according to God's creative design.
I've been prepping on this for a long time now, and got to thinking even yesterday that this was going to be difficult. And what made it difficult was really the complexity of humanity that we have even in this room. And so there are those of you in this room who are virgins. In fact, I see a lot of fathers with their sons, which is awesome. Maybe in the Q&A we'll talk about how in the end they'll need more than just this this night. But I think that's sly. What? Okay, I'm out then. Get in the car. Tell him, Chandler. There are those in this room that are virgins. There are those in this room that have been extremely promiscuous. There are those in this room who were abused sexually. They were abused sexually by someone in the neighborhood. They were abused sexually by someone in their family. I know for a fact of two women at the Village who are sexually abused by clergymen, which creates in me such rage that I don't know what to do with it. I tried to start the Ministry of Pain a long time ago, and that got shot down by the elders. Still a great idea, though. That there are those in this room who struggle with same-sex attraction. They have never acted on it, but struggled with it. There are those in this room that struggle with same-sex attraction, and they've acted on it. There are those in this room who are married, who enjoy a great deal of intimacy, both emotional and physical, with their spouse, and then there are those in this room. There are husbands in this room who drug their wives here tonight, hoping that their wife would hear something that would get them more sex. Hopefully, by the end of the night, you'll be the one repenting. I could just go on and on and on here. There are some women who don't have any recollection of abuse in their life, but when their loving, gentle husband tries to touch them, they freeze up. And there are chronic masturbating, porn-addicted young men and women in here. There are men who have a wife in the other room sleeping, who instead prefer to look at 2D images and masturbate instead of have the real thing. I literally can keep going. I came up with 30 that I could just think of off the top of my head in regards to who might be in this room. So if I start to try to dissect all of that, if I start to try to go, okay, well, let's talk about this. I mean, like, where do you hit? Where do you move? Where do you talk? Where do you don't? And so what I'm going to attempt to do is paint in very broad strokes what's going on here with sexuality. And then from there, we'll have to get into the Q&As. And you really do need to be fearless in your Q&As. I'll be very curt, very direct, very straightforward. I don't embarrass easy. I don't have a problem saying penis or clitoris or anything like that. We can just get that out of our system right now. Let's all say penis together. 1, 2, 3, penis. Okay. That's everybody feels better now. Nobody's nervous. It's okay. Here's where I think we have to start. I mean, I've wanted to do that for 7 years. That's not true. It's been much longer than that. We don't have time. We've got to get to work. I think what we've got to do tonight, I mean, we've got to get, if we can't unpack this, then we can't go anywhere, is that we've got to begin to think differently about creation, okay? Usually, when we say the term or the phrase creation, most of our minds go to the eight let there be's. Are you tracking with me? So if we went to Genesis 1 right now, and we would immediately go to the eight let there be's, and we would say that God spoke into existence. Now, I'm speaking of this completely from a Christian perspective, okay? We would say that God said, let there be light, let there be an expanse, let there be water pooled up in one location, let the sea be filled with swarming living creatures, let the land give life, the livestock, right? The eight let there be's. And so that's what we think of. We think in terms of physical creation. We think in terms of the atom. We think in terms of mountain ranges. We think in terms of the material by which we build, make, and cultivate on earth. That's what we think about when we think about creation. Okay? So if I said, what's creation? We would start to point. Okay, well, the trees, that's creation. Well, okay, my dog, that's creation. Well, I am created matter, okay? The mountains, the sunset, the solar system, the universe, the sciences that we would call natural science. That's what we tend to think about. And in one vein, that's very biblical, all right? You have the eight let there be's. You have this is where that came from. God created it. The life cycle of a plant. God created it. The structure of an atom. God created it. The temperature of the sun, the solar system. Those are created things. God created those things. And so we tend to think, when we think of creation in regards to the natural sciences, which is good and correct. But it's not. There's been a great deal of reductionism if that's how you want to define it, because in the scriptures it's far more than that, okay? When the scriptures speak of creation, they don't just speak of the natural sciences, but of invisible realities that whether we want to admit it or not, everybody knows. I'll prove my point here, okay? I'll prove my point. Romans 2, 14 through 15 says this, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law, by nature do what the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law." All right? "They show that the work of the law is on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them." Now, here's all that text says. That the law in the Old Testament is God showing us how he designed the universe to work. And what he's saying is that all men, even those who have never read the law, know by default what the law is. They'll actually obey it. So in 3 weeks, we'll cover in our weekend services the idea of Sabbath. And I can't tell you how much information, when I was researching, I came across for Sabbath in the Wall Street Journal by non-Christian social scientists who say a day disconnected from everything, a day in which you just are instead of do, is necessary for society to function and thrive at a healthy level. Now, that's Romans 2, all right? That's Romans 2, that we know the law. Even if we, so this is why you'll find in our Bible pagan literature. I mean, I don't know if you knew that. Like in the book of Titus, Paul quotes a Cretan prophet. How crazy is it that a pagan prophecy is in our Bible? In Acts 17, he quotes an Athenian poet and an Athenian poem about basically Zeus having sex with mortals and creating these Herculean offspring. But he quotes just the back half at it, as your own poets have said, we are his offspring. So there are these elements by which they're telling the truth, not because they know the truth in some biblical sense, but rather it's just written on their DNA. All right? This is also what makes the idea of Christian and secular such a silly thing. If it's truth, it's God's. right? Doesn't matter who says it or where it comes from, or I just did a little tweet the other night because we went to the Muse U2 show, and I can't tell you how many people ping me back, like basically, oh, are you going to go hear Joel Osteen too? Or, oh, you're a sellout? Or, oh, it's all I could do not to type back in. What are the rules again? I forget. Anyway. It doesn't just stand by itself. Now listen to this. Proverbs 1, 22 through 23. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. Now, what's happening here is Proverbs says, Proverbs is the book of wisdom. This is what is wise and this is what is unwise. And wisdom stands aloud in the street, or stands in the street. She's a woman, and she screams out what's right, or how God designed the universe to be. And so in Proverbs, the wisdom is screaming out, going, how long are you fools going to keep trying to do this contrary to how it was designed to function, when if you would just listen to me, I would show you how this works in such a way that the joy you're seeking would be found in it. Okay? I'll read an even better one because I love this one. 8, 22 through 23 and 27 through 30. Here's what it says. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work. Who's me? Wisdom. All right? The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of old. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. Okay, so watch this. This is going to sting a little, all right, in the brain. Wisdom, wisdom about what? Wisdom about everything. Okay? Wisdom about work, wisdom about sex, wisdom about relationships, wisdom about government, wisdom about all of it. Wisdom was set, how things would be was set before the earth was even formed. It was set before the earth was even formed. Okay? When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his commands, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master workman. I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always. And so God has not just designed and created the creative order, but rather how all things would work, including everything that you could think of in regards to education, everything that you could think of in regards to relationships, everything you could think of in regards to business, everything you, all of it, the way, the right and wrong ways were wired into how God created the universe to be. Okay, I'll give you a couple of more. Let me really prove my point with this one. Isaiah 28, 23 through 29. Here's what it says. Give ear and hear my voice. Give attention and hear my speech. Listen to this. Please listen really carefully here. Does he who plows for sowing plow continually? Does he continually open and harrow the ground? When he has leveled its surface, does he not scatter dill, sow cumin, and put in wheat in rows and barley in its proper place, and an emmer as the border? For he is rightly instructed. His God teaches him. Listen to this. Dill is not threshed with a threshing sledge, nor is a cartwheel threshed rolled over cumin. But dill is beaten out with a stick and cumin with a rod. Does one crush grain for bread? No, he does not thresh it forever. When he drives his cartwheel over it with his horses, he does not crush it. Listen, this also comes from the Lord of hosts. He is wonderful in his counsel and excellent in his wisdom. Now, did you hear what happened there? He said, there is a right way and a wrong way to handle barley. Did he not? He said, you don't roll over barley with a stone. You don't hook up your horses to a stone and roll it, because if you do, you'll ruin it and it won't work. What you do is you beat it with a stick. Now, God did not come to the man, the farmer, in this text and say, "Thus saith the Lord, grab a stick." What happened? All right? God not only created structure, but then he created direction. And as man followed his direction, he figured out this is how barley works. This is how cumin works. This is how, and he found out how God created the universe to be. Right? And then he did it. And then he did it. Now, let's go to Genesis 1:28. It'll be the only text I have you look at tonight. So we think of creation, we think in regards to the eight let there be's. What we don't think of is the cultural mandate. As soon as I read this and talk about it, we'll move on to sex. Okay? Genesis 1, starting in verse 28. So, God creates and it is good. 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 And God, right? There's eight of them. And then he stops and he makes man in his own image and he gives out a cultural mandate. And here's what it looks like. Listen. And God blessed them and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply," okay, "and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So I've got to paint this as best I can in the time that I have. God creates the garden. It's orderly. It's beautiful. It's put together. He puts man and woman in the garden and says, "Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and subdue it." Okay? So that in that cultural mandate, God is commanding and saying, "I am no longer creating per se, but making you viceroys over my creation. Go and create." So that man and woman is given the task in this text to fill the earth and to make art and to make business, all right? And to cultivate a billion other things. This is the culture of man. You fill the earth and subdue it. So think about this. The beginning of the story is a garden. The end of the story is a what? Oh, God help us. A city. Okay. Genesis, garden. Revelation, city. And the city will be filled with the glory of the nations. Right? So what's happening here? Man begins to fill the earth and subdue it. And you know what he creates? He creates art. And he creates business, and he creates systems of education, and he creates systems of government. He creates agricultural and systems of farming. He on and on and our architecture. He designs and creates architecture, all of which work according to the laws of creation, right? As God planned them to work. Now, the fall is definitely going to crush some of this, right? Which is why Revelation also says that before the glories of the nations fill the city, they're burned up. So don't go to Peter and go, "See, fire's going to consume the earth and we're all going to get raptured out of here and then he's going to blow up the earth and then we're all going to be in heaven playing a harp." And say, just please read your Bible a little bit more than that. Because what's happening is actually is he's refining. When God destroyed the earth by water, well, we're still on it, aren't we? Right? That shouldn't be complex. We are on the earth. You're on it. I'm on it. We're on it, despite the fact that he destroyed it. So this idea that he's going to like Armageddon kabluk thing, all right, where Bruce Willis, you know, didn't get to save us and then we all died, that like that idea is an unbiblical, ridiculous idea, but rather that what was broken by the fall in regards to culture gets burned up and what we're left with is the cultural mandate that we were given. that what is beautiful and right and good in regards to art, business, community, education, so all of that has a place in the kingdom. Yeah. That he designed. So, in any one of the social sciences, there are right ways and wrong ways. Okay? And so, like, people really want to argue with this. Like, I was just having a conversation with one of our college guys that says he's in a marriage and family class at UNT, and that their little thing when it comes to marriage is, man, if you're not ready, don't get married. And anybody who says anything different than that, anybody that says anything different than that, is right. So I asked him, I was like, well, what's the definition of ready? And so he kind of chuckled. He's like, well, really, at the end of the day, when you're tired of just being self-absorbed and self-seeking. And so I giggled because here, you can't apply that worldview to the dude's class. Your paper will be due on October 12th. I don't know. I just don't feel like I'm ready. I just don't feel like I'm ready to turn in that paper. I just, you know, I was thinking about it. I was even talking with some of my friends. But see, if I do that paper, I'm not going to be able to master Doom 4. And so, bro, I don't, man, I'll holler at you. I just, I don't know. So see, it's a goofy little worldview that you can't even apply to the guy's class. Anyway, that was for free. So then, this is also why I will heavily plead with you to be an architect, be a lawyer, be a teacher, be an artist, make music, be an educator, this is a cultural mandate, fill the earth and subdue it, create culture. We began with a garden, we end with a city. Okay. Which brings us to sex. If we read the creation narrative, this is gonna, I'm hoping this doesn't blow your mind. God creates sex. Okay? God did not create man and then walk away and the devil's like, you know, in the dirt forming a little penis and getting ready to stick it on the man. Okay? That's not, if you'll read the creative order, that's not how it happened. Okay? God makes men. So think about this. Think about this. So the physiology of sex is God's idea, which means God created cells, all right, that swell, cells that secrete. The physiology of it was designed by God. He is the creator. This is not a hijacked idea. Sex is God's idea. It's his idea. God did this. God created this. This was a good and beautiful gift given to us. Yeah. So you've got to say that, and I think you've got to say it a lot, because some of you, specifically coming out of fundamentalist backgrounds, have actually been taught either overtly or subvertly or covertly that sex is bad and it's dirty. And so unfortunately, you grow up all your teenage years hearing bad, dirty, bad, dirty, bad, dirty, bad, dirty, and then you get married and you're supposed to shut that off. Bad, dirty, bad, dirty, bad, dirty, beautiful. All right? And if we're honest, that's easy for males and not easy for females. It's not healthy to be told your whole life, this is a bad thing, this is a bad thing, hey, this is a dirty thing, this is a bad thing, this is bad. We don't watch it, we don't do this, this, this. Okay, free. It doesn't work well, okay? And so there needs to be a pretty consistent acknowledgement that sex is God's idea, all right? But it wasn't just given like oxygen was given. That's not how it was given, all right? There are six things that the Bible tells us sex was given for, all right? I'm going to read those six things to you, and we'll talk a little bit about each one of them. Number one, sex was given for pleasure. I didn't even pick a text for this. You can just go read the whole book of Song of Solomon, all right? Your breasts are like clusters of fruit. I will climb that tree and take hold of the fruit. That's the Bible I just quoted to you. Okay? He talks about her smell. All right? He talks about her belly. All right, now he uses it in a way that I wouldn't, you know, he says your belly's like a heap of wheat. I just don't recommend. There's some cultural translation that needs to occur before you try that one. There are other ones that I would recommend. But basically he's talking about how soft she is. Not in a negative way. That she's soft, that she's touchable. He talks about her smell. He talks about, okay. So since sex is God's idea, follow me. Orgasm is God's idea. Are you tracking? Like God said, look, God said, oh, we need to throw something else in here. Here's the deal. Orgasm. He gave the woman the clitoris, which serves no other purpose but pleasure. And on I could go here. Sex was given for pleasure, not just procreation. I have no idea where the Catholic Church got that for so long. No, it is just for procreation. No, because in Song of Songs, he says, eat and drink your fill, you lovers. At no point in Song of Solomon does he go, your belly is like a heap of wheat. I want to put a baby in there. Let's run away and make a baby together. No, he says, let's run away. I have got to get into your garden. Yeah. We got to get out of here. We've got to leave town, and I need to be in your garden. And her response? Get the keys. Right? Okay, so this is pleasure. Sex was given to us for pleasure. All right? Now, it's not the only reason. It was given to us for children. Genesis 1:28, and God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. So how do we fill the earth and subdue it? We have babies. We have lots of babies, right? Psalms is going to say that a quiverful is from the Lord, that it's a good thing to have lots of babies. Okay? It's a good thing to have lots of babies. It is a perverse and self-seeking society that says, no. This is enough, because if we have more than this, then, I mean, most restaurants are built for four. If there's a fifth one of us, we're going to have to wait even longer to sit down. If we have another one, we won't be able to go on this vacation every year. If we have another, now, I will say this, and we can get more into this in Q&A if you want. I will say there is a point that a woman goes, I'm done. Okay? So I'm not talking about the point where, a woman, did somebody say amen back there? I'm not talking about a woman going, I cannot physically and mentally, emotionally handle this. No more. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a plan between a man and a woman to maximize earthly trinkets and toys at the expense of training up a child in the way that they should go. Okay? It is a self-seeking, selfish, sad way of looking at what we're sent here to do. Okay? So sex was given to us for children. Okay? Pleasure, procreation. Genesis 2:24 is a beautiful verse. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife. Look at me. A father will leave his mother and father. They will leave their, the man will move out of their parents' house. The man will grow up, get a job, grow in responsibility, and he'll find a wife. And the two, listen to me, the two will become one flesh. This is the Hebrew idea of dod. This is a mingling of souls. So one of the things that makes sex so devastating once you get outside of the direction that God set it to work in is we want to pretend as if the mingling of souls isn't a reality. We want to pretend as though the souls are not bumping into each other and leaving residue and hurt and shame and all these other things. All right? So sex was given as oneness, right? Adam was created and there are all these other things to do. And God says it's not good for him to be alone and gives him what? A buddy? No, a wife. gives him what? Intramural football? Golf? It's not good for man to be alone. And God created Augusta, Georgia. No. It's not good for him to be alone. He doesn't give him intramurals. He doesn't give him video games. He gives him a wife. And God's direction, God's plan, how God created this thing to be, is that a man grows up, gets out of his mom and daddy's house, gets a job, finds a wife, and the two become one flesh, one partners. Okay? Not only was it given for pleasure and children and oneness, but it was given 8:4 knowledge. I love this section. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. Okay. So once again, one of the mistakes that we're making when we get outside of God's creative order is that we are trying to separate sex from a deep knowing. When sex was designed to work well inside of a deep monogamous knowing. So here's what I mean. We were not designed to have sex like animals. We were not designed to just have sex with a body. We were designed to have sex with a soul. So that there is a level of knowing and trusting that occurs where a woman feels free to let down all of her guards because she is known, and not protect herself through being cold, and not protect herself by being overly sexual in the hopes that she feels received love. But instead, there is a knowing that was designed to take place within the sexual relationship where the woman and the man feel known, so that I'm not making love to Lauren's body. I'm making love to a soul that I know and love. You tracking with that little distinction? All right? Yeah. Okay. Sex was given for protection. Let's look at this. You don't have to look. I'll just read it. 1 Corinthians 7:2-5. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So this text is talking about two things. One, that there is a desire in us to be sexual creatures. Okay, we were designed by it physically. We were designed for it emotionally. We were designed for it mentally. Okay, and so there is this desire. And so God's saying, yes, get married, okay? And then within the confines of the marriage, don't use sex as a weapon, all right? Did Pat Benatar sing a song, use sex as a weapon? Okay. There was just a huge generation gap in here at that moment. Like, I know you didn't see it, but like 9 people went, uh-huh. Everybody else was like, who's Pat Benatar, all right? And I showed my age. That sex then is not used as a weapon, which means women don't use it to control. All right? And men don't, all right? Men don't use it to manipulate and control. That's not what we do. We freely give of ourselves to our partner. Okay? There's a great deal of protection in that in regards to a wandering eye and a, yeah. Okay? Last thing. Comfort. Sex was given for comfort. 2 Samuel 12:24. Then David comforted, now listen to this, his wife Bathsheba. So for those of you who've been nervous about coming in here because you've got a sordid past, notice that we're talking about King David and his wife Bathsheba, who at one time was not his wife but was Uriah's wife. Yeah, there's a great deal of restoration that comes in Jesus Christ and his cross. We'll talk about that before we end tonight. Then David comforted his wife Bathsheba and went into her and lay with her, and she bore a son, and she called his name Solomon, and the Lord loved him. So that within the confines of marriage and within the confines of the sexual relationship, there's comfort. Some of this starts to get redundant. See, what happens is I am known. She is known. I don't love her because she looks a particular way. I love her. She doesn't love me because I look a particular way, but we love one another. Like, I love her soul. She loves my soul, so that there is this comfort in being together. Okay? And this is what God gave us sex for. These are the six things, all right, that the Bible says, this is why I gave you this. I gave you this for comfort. I gave you this for protection. I gave you this for pleasure. This is why he gave us sex. Now, here's how I think we've got to look at it before I get into how this has gone bad. If we take a step back and we go, let's look at the relationship between the man and the woman and the relationship of sex within the, or really through the lenses of the gospel or the meta-narrative, what does it look like? A man grows up, increases in maturity and responsibility. He moves out of his parents' house. He gets a job and he cultivates. He finds a wife who will partner with him in the ministry of reconciliation. Okay? There is a level of idiocy that exists within evangelical dating that is so worldly and foolish. Like, I've talked to some of you idiots. Like, you have a list. I want her to be hot, and it'd be great if she... I'm not saying you shouldn't be, you know, there should be attraction. There should be attraction. But some of you have set the bar up here, and you're not even thinking through gospel lenses. You're thinking with something else. Some of you girls are waiting on some mature, godly Brad Pitt, and some of you guys are waiting for some mature, and the reality is none of you are thinking really through gospel lenses that go something like this. Who will partner with me for life, for the good of the gospel, and for the ministry of reconciliation? Who will be a good partner with me in that? And so some of you guys, like, I plead with guys all the time at just all male things. Don't marry crazy, bro. I don't care how fine she is. I know you're looking at her breath. You just want to touch those things so bad that you're out of your mind right now. But don't marry crazy, because if you marry crazy, you get crazy and it goes dark. And then all of a sudden you can't do what you felt like. You can't give away money like you wanted to give away money. You can't risk like you wanted to risk. You can't do those things because you married crazy, and now the Bible clearly commands that instead of getting to do those things, you have to nurture, love, pursue, and work for her maturity. All the while not getting bitter at her, despite the fact that you were the idiot. Okay? And then girls, the error they make is this really kind of, well, he's a neat Christian guy, I'll marry him. No. I think you should avoid neat Christian boys like they're the plague. I really do. You find a guy who is directionally headed towards godliness. Okay? Now, are they going to be raw? Sure. Are they going to have weaknesses and flaws? Yes. Is there a desire and a direction to become a godly man? Yeah. That guy's gold. That guy's gold. Okay? So, the man moves out of his mind. He pursues a wife. He finds a partner in the gospel, a helpmate for the ministry of reconciliation. He works within his neighborhood, within his domain, whether that is law, architecture, pastoral ministry, whatever his domain is, all right? Whether he's a teacher or a coach or a welder, wherever he is, okay? He works within that domain, all right? Enjoying the wife of his youth, enjoying the body of the wife of his youth, all right? They have babies, all right? They train those babies in the way of the Lord. They encourage them, love them, create an environment that is safe, holistic, and beautiful. He lives out Deuteronomy 6 and he trains them to, as they grow up and get out of his house, all right? that they understand that whatever the domain of society that they're in, that they're going to be missionaries in that context. They train their little boys to become men. They train their daughters to become helpmates. They train them up in this way. My son gets to watch me serve my wife. My son gets to watch me come home and to fight through them. Daddy, daddy, uh-uh. Daddy, daddy, not. All right, daddy, daddy. Mama. What's up, buddy? All right. They watch that. They watch that. Read already. Grab the bar on the lawnmower. You grab the lower bar. All right. Let's go. Grab the bar. All right. Let's go. Okay. Pick up your. Come help daddy. What are we doing? I'm training him to do what? To cultivate. It's what he was called by God to do. There is a cultural mandate on him. All right. And so we train him. They move off into their domain, whatever it's going to be, as a missionary and agent of reconciliation, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, until we've got our city. Yeah. And this is how it should work. Okay? Now, the fall blew all of this up. All right? Because this is a really beautiful thing, is it not? If you think about it, this is a very beautiful oneness of soul. Are you serious? There's nothing more romantic and beautiful than the idea of oneness of soul, right? Sex was given to us for pleasure. This is great stuff. The idea that I could be fully known and feel completely safe and vulnerable, that a woman would say, I will spend my life with you and no other. I will take you weaknesses, strengths, and all, and I will be faithful in mind, body, and soul to you. That I could say that to, these are beautiful reality. There have been a lot of money made off of this idea, right? Not so much the commitment part, but the idea of that initial feeling part. Yeah. Okay. Now, what's happened is, well, Romans 1, I teach it all the time. Romans 1 clearly says, and it fits right into how sex works in our culture, right? That we prefer creation over the creator, which means we say, who gives a crap, God, why you made this? I'll take it and use it like I want. All right. We prefer creation to the creator. This is Romans 1, starting in 22. We believe the lie over the truth of God, which means my way of doing sex is better than his way. So we have a lot of sex outside of the bounds of marriage, which the Bible will call adultery. All right, we divorce sex from deep, intimate relationship. All right, and instead it becomes, specifically on college campuses, almost like a sport. Right? I read just an unbelievable amount of books getting ready for some of this and stuff that I'll just keep in my head and might come out in the Q&A. There's a great book by Fiona Atwood called Mainstreaming Sex, The Sexualization of Western Culture. It's a purely secular book. But let me read you some of the things she just said here. All right? Western society has completely been sexualized. Strip joints have become gentlemen clubs. Confession no longer takes place in a church or on an analyst's couch, but in talk shows and kiss and tell stories. And sexual exposure is getting louder and progressively more public. In the process, a new sexual sensibility is developing where sex is no longer a means of creating kinship or lasting romantic bonds, but it is the source of a transient but renewable pleasure, a form, rather, of self-expression. Furthermore, the solution to our sexual problems is increasingly something we have to pay for. And while the media offers a space for potentially accessible and helpful sexual information, this opportunity is currently being wasted. In the meantime, as the problem page letters of both male and female readers suggest, some people are struggling to make sense of the new way sex is presented to them. Here's all she said, if I could boil it down. She's saying, everywhere you look, we are fascinated and consumed with the techniques of sexuality because sex is not satisfying to us. And so this is getting really confused. So like if you get any men's magazine, from Men's Health, if you want to lift weights or you want to build model boats or whatever you do, I guarantee you near the back, you're going to find an extremely pornographic picture that says that if you buy their DVDs, they'll turn you into an amazing lover. All right? This is what she's talking about. that we are completely preoccupied with technique because we're having plenty of sex, but it's not working. Now, listen to this. This is, once again, mainstreaming sex. This is secular stuff. This is not Christian stuff. The book Mainstreaming Sex says this. Pornography, by nature, cannot deliver what it promises. Many seek to view a real sex act on a screen in order to experience some form of reality. However, the viewer soon finds that the sex depicted on a screen is much different than anything he or she will ever experience. Okay? What you're cruising for late at night or when no one else is home and what you're watching is not what you get to experience when you have sex. All right? Well, I'll keep reading her thing. Whether it is a fanciful orgy or merely lights, makeup, and dirty talk, the porn industry is quite similar to Hollywood in that reality is not truly represented. Therefore, Hardy argues, okay, more and more people are seeking homemade pornographic videos in order to achieve an experience that is much more realistic, okay? So the fastest growing pornography in the West right now is amateur porn. Okay? Because we look at the old stuff and go, that's just not real. Let me find something that's real. Her statement of porn is making promises that it can never deliver on goes back to this, we want to experience something real, and so we keep going back to pornography simply for pleasure reasons, and it's not delivering what we want it to deliver. Okay? Because the very nature of a video of people having sex is outside the realm of realistic experience, users continually become more and more frustrated and seek out new forms of satisfaction. If you're addicted to pornography in here, if you consistently look at it, is it not true that what you have to find gets bolder, 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 darker, 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 more and more and more perverse in its nature, and what used to excite you in a Sears catalog that came to your mama's mailbox doesn't even register in your mind anymore. That's what she's saying, okay? In this way, pornography is like an addicting drug. It gives you a high, but it never actually provides what you really want. Because of this, statistics show that about 6 to 8% of college students will find that compulsive masturbation to pornography is an addictive behavior they cannot live without, especially in times of stress and conflict. Naomi Wolf argues that far from inciting the male sexual appetite, pornography turns men away from real sexual activity, for real women cannot compete with porn stars. For the first time in human history, the images, the power, and allure have supplanted that of a real naked woman. Today, real naked women are just bad porn. We are lonely, empty, angry, and frustrated. All right? And so this is some of the environment that's been created by, I referenced this in the beginning, where you've got a man now who sits in front of a computer while his wife is in the bed in the next room and prefers 2D images to actual sex. All right? This is that fracture that has occurred in the fall. Now, in all things, wisdom is lining ourselves up with how God designed the universe to work and how He created things to be. Whether that's money, relationships, or sex, God is after our joy and therefore has given us commands not to thwart our joy, but to help us walk in it. All right. I want to make sure I say this. Subjection to God's law is not a restriction on freedom, but rather it makes possible free and healthy functioning as we line ourselves up with how creation was designed to be. It's why there's so much praise for the law in the Old Testament. Like Psalm 119, the longest chapter in the Bible, is just a continual praise for the law. That you designed it to work like this, you designed it to work like this, you designed it to work like this, you designed it. And every time David's obedience to it, he experiences that God's way is better. Which brings me back to all the different people in the room tonight. So the question then has to be, are you lining yourself up with how God designed the universe to work? Like young men, are you growing in your maturity and in your responsibility? Are you seeking a wife? Women, are you looking to be a helpmate to a man of God? Are you experimenting and playing with what God gave to the married man and woman? This is where the cross of Christ becomes so beautiful. So I don't know what your testimony is. I know the guys on staff, and I know my own testimony. And the bulk of us did not grow up in happy Christian homes. I came across my first bit of pornography very early in life. The average boy sees his first pornographic image now at age eight. I saw it about around that time. Parents always think they can hide stuff, which is really crazy. And it's funny now that I'm a parent because I think I've hid stuff pretty well. All right? We don't want him to get this candy. Okay, let's put it here. And then like 30 minutes later, it's like they can sense it. All right? Whoa. It's this way. Read. All right? And so I came across my first pornographic images very early on. By the time I was in seventh grade, I had a friend that had a house right next to junior high, and we'd go over to his house in the mornings, and he would put on his dad's porn. We would watch it, and that led me into some really dark things for a long time, and even after my conversion, still struggled really badly with the life of the mind, with acting out on those things, and then I found the church to be not friendly. And I've given you parts of my testimony before where I really sitting out in the crowd going, I love Jesus, but I don't know if I'm saved. Because they're acting like all that just evaporates if you love Jesus. And it is not evaporating. And there was no safe venue for me to go. I'm really drawn to wicked things still. Now, I hate them. I mean, I hate them. And after I've given in, I hate myself. I mean, I hate myself. I don't know what to do. Right? And it really wasn't until college that I actually got to confess and be honest about where I was and who I was and let the Lord begin to heal me. But I love how in the scriptures Jesus interacts with those who are so sexually deviant. Like the woman that's caught in adultery is thrown down before Jesus' feet. And do you remember what they say? The law says we kill her. What do you say? Well, he didn't pelt her with a rock, did he? He doesn't. He says, okay, let the one of you who's perfect throw the first rock, and they drop the rocks and they leave. And what's he do? This poor woman won't even look up at him. Can you imagine the shame? Like, they drug her out in the street naked. Can you imagine the shame? She thinks she's about to die. And what's Jesus' response? He picks up her face. Does no one condemn you? Neither do I. Go and sin no more. Go and line yourself up with how I've created things to be. Not, don't ever have sex again. No, go line yourself up. The woman at the well, hey, go get me your husband. I don't have a husband. Yeah, I know. You have a lot of husbands. And the man that you're sleeping with right now is not your husband. In fact, you've got this kind of sex for rent thing happening. And then what happens? He unpacks the gospel. I've got water for you. I've got clean, eternal, beautiful water for you. So the gospel covers past iniquity, and the Holy Spirit sealed into our hearts enables us to walk in obedience as we honestly share our lives, confess, repent, and make war against our sins. And so this is what sex is, and this is why it was given. And if you get outside of this, it gets messy, and it hurts, and it leaves residue, Some of you struggle in your marriage so badly now for decisions you made back then, correct? Why? Because purity now equals intimacy later. Impurity now leads to difficulty later. It's not difficulty that can't be overcome by the cross of Christ. It's just difficulty. There's a way he's designed it to be. We've got to line ourselves up there. And then I think at some level we have to demystify this whole thing. Can I be real honest with you? And then I've got to get to questions. So let me, I'll say this, and I promise you my wife won't be offended. Look right at me. Lauren, she's just a girl. You understand what I'm saying? She's not saving me. She's not completing me. Like some of you, you're looking for an Oompa Loompa. You're never going to find it. Let me be very honest. I'm trying to save you. I could be married to another woman and be happy and thriving. I could be married to another woman, make sure you're hearing this right, not at the same time as Lauren, if I would not have married Lauren, but married another godly woman who wanted to partner in ministry, I could be a happy, healthy, vibrant man just like I am today. She's just a girl. Now, I'm crazy about her. I love her. I want to romance her and work. But she is not my savior. She does not complete me. Right? You complete me? No. No. That's such crap. So we can all giggle. But some of you right now are in nightmare marriages because you're putting weight on your spouse that they cannot carry. You want them to complete you. They can't. You want them to solve your hurts and problems. They can't. And when they don't do that for you, you get angry and lash out at them. You have mystified marriage and relationships, and you're not seeing through gospel lenses. Yeah. Lauren's just a girl who I love very, very much. And that love is not built on her external physical beauty. And that love is not built on the fact that we get along really, really well. And that love is not built on the fact that she's independent, so I get to do all that I get to do. That love is not built on her sense of humor. That love is not built. That love is built on, all right, the covenant relationship we share with one another in Jesus Christ that has me serve her regardless of all those things. Which means if while I'm here tonight, there's some horrible accident and everything from her physical body to her sense of humor to her independence evaporates in a second, I'll be by her side until the day she dies. I'll cut back on travel. I'll cut back on what I do here. I'll raise our three children, and I'll stay by her side. Why? Because Cupid shot me in the butt with an arrow? No. Because the covenant I'm in with a reconciling God bids me into how he created the universe to be. And I'll grow in my sanctification as I die to myself. Let's pray and answer questions. At what age should parents begin discussing sexual issues with your children? I already gave you the statistics that really most young men are seeing pornography by the time they're 8. My daughter is 6. And we've had a basic talk of who touches her TT and who doesn't. Okay? Audrey and Reed and I have sat down and we've said, nobody touches your TT and you don't touch anybody else's TT. All right? And if that happens, you need to say no and you need to come tell mom and dad. And let me just, as just a word of caution for you dads, don't ever tell your daughter that if anyone ever hurt her, that you would kill them. I'll tell you why. There was a well-documented case of abuse by a Catholic priest that I read where the girl was being molested by the priest, the rector, and then ask her friend what would happen if her dad killed somebody. And her friend said, if your dad killed somebody, they'd put him in jail for the rest of his life. And so she sat under that abuse for another decade. Because she didn't want, if she told her dad, and her dad did what she said, she thought she would lose her dad and sat under that abuse for 10 years. And so my children, we've already had the talk. And not in regards to here's how sex works, but in regards to just the TT. All right? My daughter is memorizing the Ten Commandments. I don't know how you do it. I go, this was great. Bleeker was actually at Starbucks when this happened. But I'm going through the Ten Commandments. She says, thou shalt not commit adultery. And I said, you know what adultery is? She said, no. I said, adultery is if daddy was with another woman. And so she gave me kind of a mean look. And I was like, whoa. Daddy doesn't want any other woman but your mom. And so she did work for about 5 minutes. And this cute blonde got her coffee and then came over and was putting sugar in it right next to the table. And she looked up and she goes, dad, what about her? And so we died laughing, and I was like, not even her. And so I think it needs to start early. I think they know more than you think they know earlier than you think you know it. So I think you can fish a little bit. I think in those times of devotion, I think in those times of, I think you need to be real careful not to freak out when something sexual happens. You need to be real careful to stay steadfast and not be afraid to have those conversations. If you're going to error on early. But you know your kid better than I do, all right? Some kids are ready sooner than others, okay? They're just able to have conversation more quickly. They're able to, that's what I would say, error on early. I don't think there's an exact age. What can I do to stop being tempted sexually? Nothing. No, that's not true. Let me say this. The scriptures are clear in Hebrews chapter 4 that Jesus was tempted in every way that we are tempted. So at some level, Jesus was tempted sexually. Okay? Hebrews is clear on this. He was tempted in every way so that we would have an empathetic high priest. Now, what we've learned, what we know is that Jesus did that without sinning. So you can be tempted without sinning. So just simple things in regards to the transition between temptation and sin. Okay, we'll be honest. You don't have to admit this, men, if you're with your girl, but men recognize beautiful women. We go, that woman is beautiful. Okay? So, I mean, you don't have to say, yes, sir, we do right now. Just be like, oh, baby, no. She wanted to mingle, all right? But men can go, that woman is beautiful. That is not sinful. That's not sinful. In fact, you know, in the book of Genesis, it says Abraham's wife Sarah was beautiful. She's a beautiful woman. This woman was beautiful. In the Rachel Leah, one was beautiful, one was earthy. Right? So that's, now, noticing a beautiful woman and then crossing the line into fantasy where you either undress them or take from them what is not theirs or what is not yours, okay, that's a different thing, okay? So I think you've got to be careful what you're putting in your mind. So let's be frank. If you're looking at pornographic images, almost every woman becomes an object of lust to you, okay? If you're looking at pornographic images, then men become some means to an end for you, something for you to use or control with your sexuality, okay? So I think you've got to watch what you feed, and then we clearly get Joseph doing what from Potiphar's wife? Run. And listen, I've had two instances in the last couple of years where I was like, I got to go, all right? One of them took place at a gym, and I was teaching in Houston, just went to the gym and worked out. This woman and I are just talking. Like, she came up, just started talking. I'm talking to her. On the way out of the gym, she gave me a piece of paper with her phone number on it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm married. She's like, yeah, I am too. Give me, you know. All right. And called Bleeker on the phone and said, some boop is trying to seduce me. All right. You need to pray for me and pray for her. And man, call me later tonight. And because I wasn't worried about touching him, I was worried about where my mind would go later. Okay. And then I don't know if, Chavez is here tonight. We were in Philadelphia and literally in an elevator. And the doors opened, and a drunk blonde woman walked in straight up and just put her hand on my chest and was like, are you here for the shoot? And I was like, What? What are you guys doing? But here was a great part. I mean, the Holy Spirit blew her. I don't know who she was. I had no idea. She was very flirty, rubbing on me. And she was like, so what are you doing in Philly? And I was like, my good friend Eric Mason, who's a pastor here, had me fly up. I'm preaching at his church tomorrow morning. And she like went white and said, are you blanking with me? And I said, I swear to you, I'm a minister. I'm here to preach tomorrow morning. She went ghost white at the next stop, got off the elevator. So I thought, that's some church girl in rebellion. And the Holy Spirit just blew her up. So you run, you flee it. That's how I'd answer that. Let's go three. What does intimacy look like without physical contact and dating? This is a great, great question. Listen to me. It's conversation. How many singles do we have here? Okay, what happens when it turns physical? I'm not even talking about sex. Once you start mugging, what happens? You don't talk anymore, do you? You rarely talk. It starts to get awkward at dinners, gets awkward at coffee. You don't talk too much. You just mug. You just get together. And so what ends up happening is intimacy is laid on the wayside for cheap physicality, and you don't grow in your knowledge of one another so that when marriage comes, there is that mingling of souls, all right? The Raya Ahava Dode idea, where there is, I like this person, to I like this person beyond their faults, which means I'm here no matter what. All right, into that mingling of souls. So intimacy without physical touch looks like a great deal of conversation, a great deal of care, a great deal of encouragement, self-control, all those things. All right, all those things build into intimacy. What she likes, what he likes, what they don't like, what they, all of that comes out. You learn to talk, you learn to communicate, you learn what's going on in there. You learn where they're weak. You learn their shortcomings. Some of you, that's what makes that, people who say that first year was hell when they talk about their marriage, I immediately wonder how much they were making out when they were dating, right? Because you should have been able to spot this person's kind of selfish when you were dating. You should have. If you didn't, I have to wonder if it wasn't because you were making out. It's true. So intimacy is conversation. It's getting to know one another. Intimacy occurs when you're no longer afraid to be you in front of somebody. All right? And it should never go physical until that point has led you into marriage. Okay. Yeah. So how does a man or woman know or decide that they are ready to marry? So this is where I guess it gets a little tricky. I'm one of the rare guys. I think men should be looking for it. I mean, I am not that weird Christian passive, okay, Lord, bring. I'm about hunting, all right? I'm about some nice clothes, some jacquard, all right? I'm not kidding, I don't wear jacquard. Some green polo, all right? I'm for hunting. I think men should be on the prowl. Not, listen to me, so you hear me, not to date around, you immature idiot, to find a wife, which means, oh, look at her breast, I think I'd like to go out with her. No. So I'm far more a courtship guy than I am a dating guy. I think dating is practicing divorce. Okay? So I think a man should be, I need to grow in maturity. I need to grow in responsibility. I need to get off my mom and dad's payroll. I need to find a job. I need to buy a house. I need to find a wife. And he's working towards it. Okay? He's working towards it. So that when he identifies this woman would make a great partner in the gospel, he moves on it. So I'm even, like, I'm always so confused by that. We've been dating for 5 years. I'm confused by it. Like, biblically, I don't understand. What? 5 years? Like, what do you wait? Well, I'm waiting until we can afford. Afford what? Like, what are you wanting to buy? A yacht? Like, what? Do you have a place to live that's not one of your parents' house? Can you buy food? What else do you need? All right? So I think the man should be looking for it, and I think the woman should be looking for it. And here's what I'll tell you. A lot of the problems with dating in evangelical circles are the girls. And here's what I mean by that. You guys will tolerate some flirty idiot flirting and romancing you without seriously pursuing you. And I promise you, you hold the ace of spades for maturity for some of these idiots. Where you would go, quit flirting with me and grow up. I promise you, they will lay in bed that night and go, oh, I need to grow up. But see, because you put up with it, because you let it feed your insecurities, well, it just perpetuates it. And so you keep getting your heart broke, 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 because you're not willing to tell a man, a little boy, really, I tell you what, I think you're cute, you make me laugh. If you would act your age and grow up, we might be able to talk. But as for now, you need to get out of my face. Don't call me, textbook me, Facebook me, direct message me on Twitter. All right? You grow up and we can have this talk. So I think if Christian women would go, I'm looking for a godly man. This guy's not even trying towards that direction, so he can't flirt with me. I think you'd force guys into being serious about pursuing maturity. All right, but until then, when they can get away with making out with you in your car out front of your apartment, all right, there's no one pressing on them that they've got to grow up, right, except me. And all I do is just stand up here and call them idiots. So you'll need to help yourself in this area, okay? I don't think you have to have a lot of money to get married. I was making 12 grand a year when Lauren and I got married. I don't think you both have to have cars that run. I was driving a 1989 Chevy Corsicana with 200,000 miles on it. I swear. Okay? Our rent, we lived in a ghetto little dump house where rent was $350 a month. The sewage would back up into the bathtub. I'm not kidding. All right? Every year the heater would break. We had a space heater in a closet. We would pull out into the bedroom, shut all the doors, turn the thing. We loved those early days. We love those. If the church wouldn't have given us a pounding, you know what that is? Where people bring you like beets and all sorts of other crap that you would never eat. All right? They'd get them out of their thing, give them to you. Okay? If we didn't have that, I don't know that we would have survived. All right? You're ready when you've got a job, you're right? And then you grow with one another. Lauren was 19 when we got married. All right? I was 22, 23, something like that. Rock a cradle of love. Yeah. Okay, next.
What is a single mom to do with her boys in regards to showing them what a healthy relationship looks like when there's no godly man around?
I knew I was going to get this question, and I'm soft on it. This is where the church has to be the church. The church has to be the church. The church has to be the church here. There has to be strong examples of godliness in the church that moms can point their kids to and say, like that. Because some of you poor ladies, man, your kids are learning loyalty from the dog. In the same vein, there has to be men who are able to spot single mothers in this context and say, I'm taking my boy to this. Can I take yours too? And so twofold. Single moms need to ask for help. You're going to have to ask for help. And then men with sons, you need to always have your eyes open for women with young boys around the age of your son so that when you go camping, they get to hop in. When you go fishing, they get to hop in. When you go, whatever, they get to hop in. And this is where the church has to be the church. All right, next question. What if you don't really like to have sex, but your husband does? How do you honor God in that? Two things. More than likely, there is a reason you don't like sex. It's emotional. It's mental. It's spirit. There is a reason you don't like sex, all right? Because you were actually designed to enjoy sex. If you're a woman, you were given the clitoris by God. You were given nerve endings and you were designed to enjoy sex. It was a gift to you. He did not just give sex as a gift to the man. You tracking with that? Sex is not just a gift. It was a gift to both. So I would encourage you to seek a little bit of help on this question, whether that's in recovery or through in biblical counseling, or but to sit down with someone who can serve as a guide for you and walk you through the what is it that makes you, oh, when the idea of sex comes up. Do you still think it's dirty? Were you abused earlier in life? Were you, and then there are other things. Do we maybe need to talk to your husband? Like, take a shower. Cut your nails. Shave. I'm being serious. Is this a physical issue? Is your husband gross? Ladies, is that not legitimate? That's legitimate. Right? Does he need to shave his face? Does he need to, I mean, these are legitimate questions where you're like, sex isn't enjoyable to me. He stinks. He scratches. I mean, you know that you got to answer that. How do you honor God in that? You grow in your sanctification. And then we already read 1 Corinthians, you don't deprive your husband. You don't deprive your husband. Okay? You would serve him in this, but I still, you've got to go get help. You've got to sit down with somebody. Please don't be embarrassed. Tons of people have sexual issues in regards to their fear, or how they clench up, or how they were real. I mean, they were able to make out and do all those things before they got married, and now they're in that marriage, and everything's tightening up. They don't know why, and they just freeze up and get nervous and can't let go and can't. Some of it might be your husband, but some of it might really, there might be some issues that you really need to work through. But I want you to hear me say, sex was given to you also to enjoy. And so I would sit down with someone and get to the bottom of this. If I am dating the woman I am going to marry, then can we have sex? Are we not one flesh in God's eyes already? When do we become one flesh? You become one flesh when you enter into the covenant of marriage that is sealed by, under our laws, the state and an ordained minister. Okay? Just because you bought a ring, just because you put it on her finger, and just because the wedding date is set does not make you married. And if you would like, I can give you an unbelievably long list of men and women who have been engaged and are not married, which means before the wedding came, it disintegrated. You're married when you're married. This is a game. This is a game. It's a game. It's opening your presence, your Christmas presents at Thanksgiving. That's what this is. It's a game. You wait, you get married, and then you celebrate. And then you celebrate. Yeah. Is masturbation a sin? I can't take you to the text and show you that masturbation is a sin. I think this is a wisdom issue. I have a hard time believing that you can masturbate without lusting. That's always my... Now, you can try to... I think, this is where it gets complex. If you're asking me, within the confines of the marriage relationship, is self-stimulation or is that sinful? I would say absolutely not. If you and your spouse play this game where you have iChat and when you're in a hotel in Atlanta and if you play, okay. So there are these things where I'm going, no, it wouldn't be sinful. That wouldn't be sinful. But if you're a single man, single woman, and you're talking about you by yourself in the shower, you by yourself in the bathroom, you by yourself in bed at night, you by yourself, you would not be able to convince me that you're able to masturbate without thinking of what's not yours. Okay? So I would say this is a wisdom issue, and I lean on saying, yeah, it's sin. You're thinking of a woman that's not your wife, all right? You're thinking of a woman that's not your wife, okay? That's lust. It's lust, okay? So that's how to answer that. Are all types of intercourse God ordained? Okay, I think I know what you're asking here. there's really only one type of intercourse, but there's a lot of different things that people do. I think what you're asking me about is anal sex, oral sex. I don't know if that's what you're asking, but that's what I'm getting from this question. There's really only one way you actually do intercourse, but there are other things that we do. So Is it sinful or is it okay to have oral sex? Oral sex actually is in the Bible. Okay, you can find oral sex in Song of Solomon. Not sinful to have oral sex at all. Is it sinful to have anal sex? Once again, I want to get into some wisdom issues here. One, it is medically not healthy. Okay? And what I mean by that is we were not physically designed for that. Now, at the same time, if there is a desire on both parties' part, okay, to experience anal sex, there needs to be a lot of conversation. And what I would say is I would really dig into why. It is never okay to shame and dominate your wife. Never. And where she desires that, that's a screaming alarm that something needs to be looked at. Okay? So I wouldn't say anal sex is a sin. I would say if both parties want to experience that, that you both are... Now, if you're the husband pressuring, I think we've got some problems there. Okay? So if that's what you're asking, oral sex, yes. Anal sex, I'm just kind of like, oh, golly. I would really want you to try to work through why. Because see, I think you want to have anal sex because you're looking at porn. That's why I think you want to have anal sex. You want to have anal sex because you've been looking at crap you shouldn't be looking at, and it's kind of this taboo, oh, I'd like to put it in there. But I could be wrong on that. That could be judging harshly. But I think it's a game that teenagers play. Oh, this isn't real sex. That's what I think it is. So both parties want to experience this. Okay. All right. But I'd be really careful, and I would look into some things because it can be very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. What about sex toys within marriage? I hope this thing doesn't have caller ID. Oh, it does, friend. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I don't think. Maybe it does. Okay, let's talk about this. Sex toys within marriage, I think are fine. I think there's got to be a couple of, once again, I think there are a couple of things we have to look at. It's not okay to have sex toys that you're using exclusively, like by yourself. Okay? This is a shared oneness knowledge gift we've been given here. Okay? The other thing is you don't want to become addicted to or slaves of what the toy brings. Okay? So you want to be able to have a deep enough, warm enough, close enough, intimate enough relationship to orgasm without a bunch of toys. Okay? So toys are fun, let's do something different type things. Not let's let this replace, okay, what God gave us to celebrate and explore. Are you tracking with that? Okay. Sex toys aren't sinful. I would tell you be careful where you get them, all right? Because I don't know if, I mean, Walmart doesn't sell them, which means you're going to have to walk into or you're going to have to get online onto something that, A, you're probably going to get emails and flyers from, or you're going to, you know, I just say be very careful here, but there's nothing sinful about sex toys within the confines of marriage. How do you heal a woman's heart, restore interest in sex after abuse, rape? How about abuse through pornography? This is such a great question. My heart hurts so bad for whoever sent it in. I'm going to answer it for the man, and then I'm going to answer it for the woman, not knowing which way a woman's heart. Okay. Here's how a man helps heal a woman's heart who's been abused and raped. Through a great deal of long-suffering, loving, encouraging, being tender with, being sweet to, never pouting, and always pursuing her heart. The woman must, at some point in all of that patient, loving, long-suffering, seek and find help. His love, see, the most painful lesson a man learns in marriage is that his love is inadequate to heal the wounds of his wife's heart. See, the crap that they show you on movies is that a man's love has the power to heal a woman's heart. That's a lie. No matter how romantic, and here's why I usually never recommend Christian books on marriage and sex, because what they want to do is this. They want to tell the man, what you need to do is vacuum the floor for her. Do the dishes for her. You serve her. That's like foreplay to women. Well, that's a lie. And then here's what happens. That poor guy does all those things. His wife still isn't responsive to him. And now what does he have? He has bitterness and anger. Which does what? Feeds into her hurt. He patiently, lovingly encourages. They go to counseling together. They go to counseling together. He finds encouragement from other men that encourage him in what will be long suffering. All right? This is how a man rescues the heart of his wife. And sometimes it takes 20, 25 years. Yeah. Okay. I messed up and I am no longer a virgin. Am I wrong for thinking I don't deserve a virgin to marry? Yes, you are wrong. Deserve is a stupid word. Let's say it like that. Deserve is a stupid word. You don't deserve anything. God is so infinitely gracious and beautiful. He gives to all freely. You're assuming that a virgin deserves a virgin. Sure. Yes. Please don't punish yourself where Christ has not punished you. Why would you do that? Why would you go, oh, she's a virgin, I can't. No. No. All things new. That guy is dead. He was nailed to the cross of Jesus Christ. All things are new. All things are new. Yes, you're wrong. You're wrong. There's grace for you. All right. I'm a stripper. I need help. I want out. I know that's not a question. You get a hold of us. Where should I send this? Care? Okay. You get a hold of us. You call the office. And I hate that this is happening on Friday when the entire staff leaves Monday for staff retreat. We would love to help you, love to serve you, love to walk with you. If you will contact us, we'll help you in any way that we can. We'll help you in any way that we can. I hate that I'm leaving it like this. If you'll have this courage, then so I'm gonna have to ask you. Yeah, you wanna stand up, Shelly? If you'll find Shelly here. Shelly Lawson, and you'll just come up and grab her hand. You don't even need to say anything, just grab her hand. She'll be out in the foyer. This is going to require courage for you. We'll figure out what we can do to help and how we can help you. Okay? Okay.
What about homosexuality? Do they choose this, or were they born with this?
Okay. Homosexuality is a picture on the canvas of creation of man's rebellion against God. Ephesians 5 says that God put it in the heart of man to pursue the woman as a picture on the canvas of creation of God's pursuit of us. Romans 1 says that homosexuality is the opposite side of that picture, which means that in response to man saying, forget your way, God, I'll take my way, okay? That man desires man and woman desires woman. So, follow me here. That the greatest rebellion a man can paint on the canvas of creation is forget the woman, I'll take myself, I'll take another man, right? That's the ultimate picture of self-exaltation, self-pursuit, rebellion against God. Okay, so to answer the first one, it's not a preference, it's a sin. Okay, to answer the second one, born with a struggle or chosen by person to be, I don't think it matters. Okay, I think this is a silly question. Because what we want to do here is say, well, if they're born with it, then you can't say it's wrong. I was born with an innate desire to sleep with every beautiful woman I see. Was I not? I was born with the innate desire to sleep with every beautiful woman I see. And no one's going to go, yeah, that's cool. I was born with an innate desire to hurt people who don't give me what I want. My son has the same problem. He bites, pushes, and hits. I don't think it changes anything one way or the other. The fall is definitely so severe that it would have fractured even the DNA makeup of humanity. Okay? Now, let me say a couple of things. The church has historically handled this sin in a ridiculously biased and horrible way. Okay? There should be just as much patience, just as much grace, and just as much love for those who walk in same-sex attraction as there should be for those of us who struggle in any other way. Okay? We want to make one taboo over and above the rest. So you end up getting this really weird, hypocritical place in the church where, a guy can sleep around with a woman and we just kind of slap him on the wrist, but you let this one, we're just kind of grossed out by this and he can't be a part of the church. Shame on us for that. A shame on us for that. So, by the way, I think I did a teaching on this. It's on the web somewhere. It was called The Dark Exchange, and I taught on homosexuality in particular. So you can check that out on the web. Okay. Do I talk to my son about what sexual sin I have been involved in? When? How do I start that? I think there's a time for full disclosure. I really think there is. I don't know when that time is. Okay? So I think that in the progress, see, I don't think you have a talk. I think you have talks. Are you tracking with that? I don't think that there's the sex talk with a chart and birds and bees, which I tried to look up why they call it birds and bees. That doesn't even make any sense. Birds and bees. It's cross species. That's what I don't even understand. Okay? So I do think there's a time for full disclosure, but I think that all this kind of comes out in talks. So as you begin to walk, as you begin to say, this is what it's for, where you go this way with it, I think that's how that comes out in those conversations. And I think there's time for full disclosure, and I don't know that full disclosure happens when they're 8 or 10 or 11 or 12. I think it does happen, But I think that comes out as you build intimacy with your children, as you build trust with your children, and as you begin to unpack really what God gave us sex for. Okay? Yeah. How do I explain to my future spouse that I will not be able to give her children due to health reasons? Will we have less sex? To answer your second question, I have no idea. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. To answer your first, I think you owe this to them pretty early. And now I'm not saying first date early. All right. Thanks for meeting me here. I can't give you children. Okay. But I think as the relationship becomes more serious, I think you owe this to them very early. So here's what you have to do. You have to throw yourself on their grace and God's grace. And that's what you've got. And really, there are a lot of areas in life that you have to do this on. Now, this one is deep. But we've got guys on our staff that had, you know, they're bringing things into the marriage from past experiences that they're having to tell their wife, I'm bringing this into the marriage, you know, this is going to be complex. You just have to throw yourself on the grace and mercy of Christ and trust that if she's a godly woman, that she'll be able to wrestle through this and that you'll be patient and let her wrestle, okay? But I think you need to confess this pretty early on and just be real honest, okay? Why is living with someone before marriage wrong? Okay, I mean, this is a wisdom issue. It's not wrong as much as it's dumb. And so here's what I mean by that. You're talking about cohabitation, okay? There's nothing in my interaction with human beings. Okay, let's do it this way. When you're in the stage of moving towards getting married, the physical becomes more and more difficult, does it not? Because you're growing like this. You started out here and you're growing and you're growing and you're growing and you're growing and you're growing. You're growing closer and closer and closer together. So those urges that God gave us, where the fire might have been on one, now it's on 10, right? And you've got like 3 months left or whatever. So to most people, you have to go, okay, hey, it's probably a good idea for you not to be alone. There's a guy on our staff that's so great. He was living in a different city at the time they were engaged. He literally called and said, I'll see you at the wedding. That's 2 months away, and I'll see you in 2 months. That's when we will see each other. That's when that's happening, all right? So if you're both in the same apartment, all right, what you're doing is you're faking marriage. Like you're faking it. And then I honestly, now maybe you can come up and talk to me afterwards. You would not be able to convince me that you're not having sex. So how it'll work is, oh, let's just fall asleep on the couch together. Right? I mean, oh, let's just watch a movie. Oh, okay. And then it just progresses. The physical progresses. It's how it was designed to work. So kissing, pecking, leads to kissing, lingering, leads to full-on kissing, which leads to pulling people in tighter, which leads to, and I'm just going to do the whole thing, all right, for you, but this leads to this, 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 leads to this. When you're cohabitating, this is a wisdom issue. No one would be able to say, this is wrong. We're just saying it's unwise and foolish for how God designed the thing to work, okay? So I can't take you in the Bible right now and go, here's where it says, do not cohabitate. I would say that you're setting yourself up to fail, to fall. Okay? Next question. What should I do if I'm currently being sexually abused by a family member? I don't know how many of you know this. There was sexual abuse in my home growing up. Here's what I would strongly recommend you to do. You need to tell someone, and you need to do it quickly. I would say to you, this is not your fault, and you have not brought this on yourself. If you don't know who to tell, you tell us, and we'll take it from there. Okay? This is not your fault, and you did not ask for this. Whoever this is a sick, perverse, hurt person. Okay? You need to let us know. Okay? And we've got to get you out. Okay? Please hear me, because I know right now where you're sitting, there are all this, well, this will happen, this will, this, this. No. You tell us, tell someone, and let's get you out. The consequences of their action is not yours to carry. Are you tracking with me? you need to get out, and in so doing, they will have an opportunity to heal, and so will you. You need to let us know. You need to come up to one of the pastors here. You need to, but we need you to move on this, and you need to do it quickly. This is not your fault. And you did nothing to incite this. What do you do if your Christian friend is sexually active? I go Matthew 18 is what I do. Which means I sit them down and go, this is a sin. Here's in the scriptures where it says it's a sin. You're outside of the bounds. You need to repent of the sin. If they say, yeah, I know, I don't care, then I come back with another friend. If they still go, yeah, I know, screw you guys, I don't care, then I come back with three. If he says it again, I give them over to the pastors and elders. That's what you do. Okay? Now, if they're repentant, then praise God. If they're repentant, then praise God. If you sit down with them and you go, you know this is, I'm there, and they go, I know, and then they repent and they cry, then praise his name. Praise his name. But I go Matthew 18. That's what you do. That's what you do. You should love him enough to do that, by the way. Let's go. As a father, do I lead the sex talk with my daughter, or should that be my wife? I think either. I don't have a teenage daughter, so this is a rough one for me. Like, I don't know. I can give you just wisdom. It's probably going to be better coming. I think she would, if she's 11, 12, a big part of mourning as a father, I can already feel it coming, is when it's not daddy's little girl anymore, it's mama's little girl. Like that transition of, I'm not looking forward to that. That's going to hurt. I'm going to have to let go, right? So maybe when they're 11 and 12, if that's their age, you probably need to let mom take that one and just let her have the talk. Or maybe you do it as a family. I don't know. Your family dynamics, I think, would play into this. All right? If you're the cool head, all right, if you're the cool, calm, collected head in the family, where you can go, let's talk about this, here's what it is, we love you, and your wife's a little bit neurotic, then maybe, so see, I think family dynamics play into this. Sorry, I wish I could answer this better. I think family dynamics play into this. My gut is let the wife do it, but if she's a little high strung and freaks out about stuff like that, or then I would take that and run with it. So. Okay, what do I do if I feel I have met my future husband, but he is currently an immature Christian boy? To me, this is all about trajectory. Okay, are you tracking with what I mean by trajectory? If he's serious about his faith, if he's serious about his faith, and he's seeking to grow in his faith, he's actively growing in his faith, then and he's throwing the game on you. Sure. Okay? So it's all about trajectory. If they're going, I love the Lord, I want to grow in the Lord, they've sought out mentors, they're in the Word, they're in Bible studies, they're trying to see their flesh beat down there. If this is who we're talking about, and yet he's still just a little immature, still a little, then I would have no problem in you dating that. There are a lot of guys that I've walked with for seasons that are extremely immature in their faith, but their trajectory was unreal. All right? So for me, it's all about what are they doing? Where are they headed? Where are you? Because here, let me be honest with you. What I wanted in a woman doesn't exist at 19. What I was looking for is trajectory. All right? What you as young women are looking for, like if you listen to me tonight and I'm like, godly, ferocious man, you're glad. Or if you're going, oh, look at how Bleeker loves his wife. That's what I want. Oh, look at how Chandler talks about his wife. That's what I want. Look at that. Man, we're in our 30s. Michael Bleeker at 20. Matt Chandler at 21, 22. It's not what you're seeing now. It's not what you're seeing now. So I think what you've got to look for is that trajectory. Is this a man who's serious about his faith? I did not say, is this a man who goes to church? Is this a man that's serious about his faith? If the answer is yes, I think you've got a great trajectory. I think it's okay to enter into that relationship. And if some of that immaturity is harmful to the relationship, then I think it's okay for you as the woman who's a little bit more mature at this moment to point out that immaturity and say, I can't do this until you grow in that. So I had a dear friend in college, Mike Hale, who the girl he's married to now, he asked her out and she was like, no way. He's like, why not, baby? And she was like, well, first of all, could you call me baby? But second, and she just really listed out, in this area of your life, you're a disheveled fool. And I might enter in and really fall in love with you and have my heart broken because of this area of your life. And Hale will, to this day, talk about how that drove him to get help, to look at that area of his life, to start organizing that area of life. And then he, you know, I think like 6-7 months later, he's like, huh? Ha, ha, ha. Oh, yeah. If you say Lauren is just some girl and you could be with another girl and be happy if you wanted, then was Lauren designed by God to be with you? Yes. Do you know how I know this? Because I'm married to her. All right? This goes back to our little prayer talk. All right, is God sovereign or does prayer change things? Yes. All right? In the same way, could I be married to another woman and be happy and be vibrant and be, yes. But I'm not. I'm married to Lauren, who God gave me. The wife of my youth is a gift from God. Lauren was designed by God for me. That was not for me to know, not for me to see, not for me to understand until I put the ring on her finger. And then as we began to walk, as sanctification began to occur, and now I've read some things sociologically that say really year 10 in the marriage is when you finally figure out how to be a lot more selfless, how you kind of really learn one another. You learn how to fight best. You learn how to, all right? And so in the end, there's a great deal of sanctification that's brought about what Lauren and I are right now. And I would say she is a great gift from God to me. But I would not, while we were dating, or I would never say, oh, she's the one. She's the one because I married her. Okay? Okay. Ah, I love this question. If I really like a girl's personality, but I'm not particularly attracted to her sexually, is that a reason not to date? No, it's not. It's not. I think you can absolutely grow in attraction. And here's what I'd give you. If we ask the question, how many of you hung out in a group for a year, for 8 months, for 9 months, when all of a sudden one day you woke up and went, gosh, she's beautiful. Are you serious? Like, I've got people close to my world who are married now, who were in the same crowd for a couple of years and never looked at one another and said, yes, that's what I'm talking about. If any, there might even have been some, nope. Some of them might even be in this room tonight. I don't know. And then what happened? One day, there it was. Ahava. There it was. Yes. Them. God, how did I not see that? So, yes, I think you can. See, I think we've got to get past the cover. I don't know how else to say this. I think we've got to get past the cover. Our culture is terrified of growing old. We're terrified of growing old, okay? So we'll dye our hair and push poison into our wrinkles and, you know, grab our flesh and sew it to our collarbone and, you know, we'll just do all that stuff because we're terrified of getting old. We just are. And so everything to us is so external that you really rob yourself of really beautiful, beautiful, beautiful things. So yeah, date her. Because you are, like even right now, you are attracted to her. All right, so attracted. Attracted doesn't mean, oh, physically I want to have sex with her. That's not attraction, that's lust. Attraction is, gosh, I enjoy her. Okay. We're all going to grow old. Gravity's going to take over. Hair is going to sprout where it historically has not sprouted. Is it not? I mean, I'm not, I know you're thinking this is funny. I'm not. This is simple biology. You're going to gain weight in certain places. Women, you're going to have babies, and it's going to blow your body up. It is. It is. You don't, it takes a while to recover from that, man. It's a human being growing in you. Okay? We're going to get wrinkly. Our teeth are going to fall out. It's going to happen. All the technology in the world, you might be able to disguise it, but there's nothing sadder than a 90-year-old man with a 40-year-old face. It's just weird. Like, why don't you have any wrinkles? You were born in 31. Okay? So attraction is, biblical good attraction is, God, there's something about her I just enjoy. I enjoy her. So here's our problem. We're elevating sex to a position it shouldn't be. Sex is not a deal killer. Sex is not the, so even the little thing that we do, and there's nothing wrong with this, but I just think it elevates, like even the thing that you do where you get married now and the girls are taking like risque pictures for that, there's nothing wrong with that, but at some level it's elevating this piece that doesn't need to, in the end, there are a lot more beautiful things to relationships than sex and nudity and nakedness and, yeah, so man, date her, those are good gospel lenses. Yes, you enjoy her. That's a gift because I could put you in contact with some guys who married beautiful. And as they sobbed themselves to sleep, more lonely than they ever imagined, you might be encouraged. Yeah, say date her. Date her. Woo her. I love it. Okay. May we, every one of us, walk in the rhythm God designed for this, not just in His structure, but in His direction. May young men grow up. May married men get help. May pornography be broken. May the hearts of women heal. And may we enjoy and walk in the creative gift of sex that God has given us. Men, pornography will absolutely destroy you. Please get help. Quit playing this game. You're not going to fix yourself. It's been too long. Ladies, you know, actually the fastest growing market for pornography right now is women. Get help. This is going to own you. Okay? For those of you, ladies, who even though your husband is gentle and nice and loving, get cold when he pursues you sexually, go get help. Show up at recovery. Go see a biblical counselor because something's gone wrong in there. God gave you this to enjoy. It's not right. That's being taken from you by what is dark and evil. Don't resign yourself to that. Don't resign yourself to that. You want all that God has gifted you with. Ferociously pursue that. Young single women, help our boys grow up. I'm doing my part. I'm doing all I can do here. All right? You still have a lot more power than I do. Help them grow up. Be patient. Wait for a godly man. All right. Let's pray.